And now,
Days of Love, Days of Hate, Days of Hanukkah, every one of them goes to love. Days of Hanukkah, every one of them goes to love.
Your Chilpack Hollywood Hour Top 10 with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
We certainly hope everyone had a wonderful and safe Christmas, don't we, Dean Haglund?
We sure do. And what a happy Boxing Day this is. A happy Boxing Day to all the people in the Commonwealth.
I think for you, actually, it's probably the 27th. This is, for me, the 26th. But the point is that Hanukkah is ongoing.
Right.
That's why we chose Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings' 8 Days of Hanukkah to help play us in today. Anyway, happy holidays, everybody. We've got a special installment of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. As Garrett Watley mentioned, I think this is top 10 show number 4 of this year 10 of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. The fourth of 10 top 10 shows we plan to do to commemorate this very special year of the show. And
see what you're doing.
And interestingly enough, it's the second time this calendar year we are doing a top 10 television series show, because we didn't get around to listing our top 10 television shows of 2015 until February 1st, 2016. So we're ahead of the game this year. I mean, look, we start 2017 with fewer things on our to-do list. I love it.
Fantastic. That is so good. That's what I need, because, listen, it's stacking up here.
What's interesting is one of the other things we talked about on that show on February 1st was a lawsuit of the week. And want to revisit that lawsuit, because we never got a chance in October, early November. God knows there was so much going on with the election and other things. We never got a chance to discuss the news relating to this lawsuit.
Well, refresh my memory.
I will, and I'll begin to refresh your memory with this sting.
The Chilpack Hollywood Lawsuit of the Week.
Thank you, Garrett Watley.
Thank you, Garrett.
As you might recall, Byron Allen filed $10 billion lawsuits against various cable providers and against the FCC for racial discrimination. And it had to do with the carriage fees and with the access that black-owned channels, like his entertainment studio networks, either would receive or not receive from the cable providers in question. And
right.
The FCC was included in this because they were violating, I guess, their own charter in terms of protecting equal access, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, preventing such racial discrimination. Some things have happened during this year relating to this. But most recently, in a historic ruling, Byron Allen's Entertainment Studios Network I don't know if granted's the right word. Federal District Court Judge George H. Wu denied Charter Communications' motion to dismiss the $10 billion lawsuit against Charter for racial discrimination in contracting in violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1866.
Wow.
So the attorneys for Byron Allen and his company said, "Today was a huge victory for my client. The $10 billion racial discrimination lawsuit will move forward against Charter Communications. The judge addressed the complexities of this case, and discovery will commence immediately. We have direct and circumstantial evidence that we put forth in our lawsuit. We have evidence of racial bias harbored by top-level Charter executives with decision-making authority, and allege in detail the discriminatory treatment ESN suffered at the hands of these executives. The thing goes on, but I love that in the press conference where they get to celebrate the announcement that the trial will go forward, these lawyers are basically letting everyone know what they have. Because clearly they want to push Charter to settle this. Right.
Ah, right. So you lay your cards on the table and just go cash out, because the longer the lawsuit goes on, the more it costs everybody and the less the actual victim gets at the end of it. Talking from experience.
Yeah. And so as a result, it's expected that Comcast, which sought to dismiss and successfully dismissed the $20 billion lawsuit against them, that dismissal will now be overturned by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And it's game on. A few weeks back, we talked about diversity in television.
Yes.
This is the sort of thing at the corporate level that starts to change things, where
right.
ownership by people of color, by members of diverse groups, where these networks are started to be given fairer, more equitable access and playing fields.
Right.
I'll share this little quote from Byron Allen, and then we'll move on. Everybody talks about diversity, and everyone complains about the lack of diversity and economic inclusion, said Byron Allen. Today, we made history by doing something about it. This lawsuit was filed to provide distribution and real economic inclusion for African American owned media.
Oh.
So there you go.
That's fascinating.
And, I don't want to get into the weeds on this, but really, from what they've posted, from what they've released, the numbers and these contracts, the language in these contracts, they just don't lie.
Right.
So,
they got a case.
They've got a case, and that's the kind of thing that, changes things.
Yeah.
All right. So I have our top 10 lists of best shows of 2015 open in front of me.
Okay.
So I can reference back to those. I, of course, wrote those down in a preview of this, in a blog previewing this week's show.
Right.
But why don't we just start, shall we? Do you have any comments about the year that was, about caveats, about regrets, anything?
I do have one caveat, and it's a huge one, in that I live in Australia.
The same caveat last year. I mean, so
yeah, but I just
we could just put ditto, but yeah.
But again, the shows that arrive here are arriving at different days and dates than perhaps, like some I think I saw, it's currently based on the chatter in all the social media of everybody loving this thing. At the same time, other things that are on my list, I don't know the year that they were made. I just know that this is the year I saw them, and that's the year I loved them.
Oh, well, now you're changing things then, because last year's list was an incredibly diverse list with shows from around the world. We eagerly anticipate which Scandinavian crime show is going to be number one this year.
It's going to be good.
Jord Scott.
What was it last year?
Jord Scott was number one last year.
Oh, yeah, that was good. Oh, my God.
That was your number one ahead of Mr. Robot, which was number two. But every season that you had on last year's list, for example, DCI Bank Season 5, they were all contemporary seasons.
Oh, there. Oh, yeah. Good.
So I may have to be pausing occasionally to do some research. See, caveat was going to be twofold. No, I guess only really one caveat. This is the worst opening ever. Welcome to the worst opening ever. I don't know.
Caveats?
Well, I don't know. I guess it's one show. How can I have two caveats about one show? But look,
right.
Man in the High Castle, which was on your top 10 last year, which dropped at the end of November 2015. I watched it In 2016, after you had it on your list, you had it number nine on your list, and I had it, and it is one of like the three or four of my favorite shows I watched this year. But I can't have it on the list because it was a 2015 show, not a 2016 show. You already had it on your list last year, so I'm not including it on my list this year. My other caveat is, as much as I love that, and as much as this is December 26th, 10 days after season 2 of Man in the High Castle became available worldwide streaming, we're pre-recorded and I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Well, way to blow that one. So wait a sec then, because, you had Fargo season 2 last year.
Yes, of course.
But I only watched it this year. Now that's my favorite.
But see, that's what I'm saying is that, all right, I don't want to deny you that. But anyway, so people, the point of what I'm saying is, we will be talking about Man in the High Castle season 2 very soon. And I loved season 1. I just absolutely loved it. I loved it more than you did even. If I had seen it last year in what was an extraordinary year of television, I think it wouldn't have been in my top 4 or 5, but it would have definitely been on the list as well.
Wow.
And this year, yeah, there was a temptation because it was a little bit of a weaker year, but I didn't do it. So anyway, do you have any honorable mention that are not making your list, but that you wanted to give a shout out to? Anything like Danger 5?
Well, actually, Danger 5 is on my list, believe it or not. The more I watch it, the more that fever dream of what the hell this is becomes more engrossing. So let's not get there.
Yeah, we already have, but let's not. And, so
honorable mentions. Yeah. It's some of the talk shows, I think, through this election year that had done so much.
That's a great
one of them,
point.
Of course, is on my list. But I think I'm going to give just a shout out to just one segment of Seth Meyers' thing, which was A Closer Look. And how he held the Trump thing to the feet to the fire, as it were, in sharply written little segments. I never watched the whole show. I only watched the closer look that showed up in my inbox through the YouTube. And that's an honorable mention right there, because I think it's so easy to do the Jimmy Fallon thing and just sort of make nice and as opposed to rise up in your rage and have that comedy writing take it onwards.
Last year on my list, I had the Netflix show from the Marvel television universe, Jessica Jones. I think I had it number 7. And of course, I enjoyed that season 1 of Daredevil a great deal, but ultimately I went with Jessica Jones. And I wanted to doff my cap to the Marvel television universe. As you know, I wasn't really enjoying season 2 of Daredevil, but they really pulled it out, and it ended up being quite enjoyable. And even better still, and maybe the best Netflix show thus far, Luke Cage. Luke Cage is a great deal of fun. And even though I made it seem like 2016 wasn't as strong of a year, what I actually should have said was it didn't achieve the levels of greatness that I thought some shows did in 2015. But overall, I actually thought there was more good work being done in 2016 than 2015. So Luke Cage and the Netflix Marvel shows don't make the cut, but I wanted to doff my cap to them, and especially Luke Cage. So let's get started, Dean, with your number 10.
Number 10. Well, and this is going to start a fight right off the get-go, because as we remember in our musicals, you said Baz Luhrmann hasn't done a thing. And I said, hey, man, go to Netflix and check out The Get Down.
Okay, this I didn't say that he hadn't done a thing. The topic was movies, and how I said the irony of Baz Luhrmann and Rob Marshall being so linked together, where people somehow felt the need to pit Moulin Rouge versus Chicago, like only one can be good, and the other one has to suck, which really helps the overall genre of musicals by doing that, by pitting against each other the only two successful ones. I said the irony is that that was the high point for both of those men's cinematic career, and that after that, their movie work was appalling and seems to have pretty much dried up. That's what I said. And you
right.
said, no, that's not true. Baz Luhrmann has done a Netflix documentary series. And
okay. Okay. I never said documentary series. That's the first thing I never said.
So this okay. show, so my point is, that show, totally inappropriate for you to have brought up Baz Luhrmann's series to support what we were discussing or anything. And you brought, and it led to 10, 15 minutes. This show, incredibly appropriate for you to bring it up. So Baz Luhrmann's Netflix series about what kind of music is it?
Well, okay, that's just the thing. It draws a line from 70s disco through and how that is a direct lineage through gospel, R&B, and rap music. And how that all came out through the Bronx and the New York music scene at the time. It is dramatically laid out. It is thoughtfully portrayed. There are some fantastic musical sequences that are in all the different genres that are laid out. And you follow this ragtag group that are forming and are learning how to scratch records and become a rap group. By the final episode, it's fun, it's thrilling, and this actor Justice Smith, who you are going to be seeing great things from him. He is he's carrying the show. It's he doesn't have that many things on his resume, and he is so impressive in this thing as Ezekiel, the writer brainiac kid who's torn between two worlds, both the Mayor Koch 1970s political. Aspirations and his need to be with his band. Fascinating, well done, and Baz Luhrmann creating it and directing a couple episodes.
So The Get Down is number 10 for Dean Haglund.
That's right. What's your number 10?
My number 10 appeared higher on last year's list. I think it was number 8, and I did think that in 2015 it had a stronger year. But still, nevertheless, I think the cream of the crop of politically oriented comedy shows on television, and it's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
Oh, yeah.
I had it a little bit lower this year because, understandably, it tended to fixate far more on one storyline, one news
right.
story, much more often. And
yes.
And now that that is behind us, I hope it will go back to being what is so valuable and so needed, a show that each week will do riveting explorations and hilarious commentary on issues you might not even have known were important.
Right. Such as, I was surprised that the segment on... what was the one I just saw? The chicken farming industry.
Oh, my God.
And not the cruelty of the chicken.
Okay. I just listened to the February 1st show in which you said, what was the one I just saw? Oh, the chicken farming industry.
You know what? That would maybe repeat it over and over again over here.
I could just cut and paste what you said from last year's show. All right, anyway, John Oliver, Last Week Tonight, my number 10. What's your number 9, Dean Haglund?
Well, there's a fever dream happening here. I don't know where this show comes from. I can only assume that someone has hacked my Netflix account and put in their own home video of a thing called Danger Five, the ongoing saga of an international group of spies, shall we say, that have their every episode 15 minutes long. Their goal is to kill Hitler. That's it.
In the 1960s. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, 1960, but they also time travel. So there's ones where they actually go back in World War II, but then they also jump forward to the 1980s. And now this thing is low budget, so anytime there's an action sequence, It is toys being pulled by strings, trucks, airplanes, all of that sort of thing. These are all clearly just videotaped tiny little corgi toys, maybe. And it seems the cast comes from not just Australia and Germany, but all over Eastern Europe. Many of the female actresses seem to be speaking fluent Russian, not learning it phonetically. I have no idea where any of these actors have come from. Dinosaur is the production company, and their only credit is Danger 5. It has apparently 3 seasons of about maybe 10 to 15 episodes each. And I watched this with my jaw dropped, neither laughing nor crying, but in shocked bemusement.
Well, and I shared with you, I think, I reached out to, maybe I didn't, but I reached out to the makers of Danger 5. Did I tell you this?
Uh-huh. No.
Because I knew you were a fan, and I was thinking, okay, wouldn't this be great if Dean gets on the show? and because it's made there in Australia. And
it has to be.
It's shot in Australia. It's distributed by a German company. And
I see.
So I reached out to let them know that TV's Dean Haglund, beloved star of an episode of Sliders, was interested in... that he watches it rigorously, and that I work with him, and I think he would love a chance to be on the show. And
yep.
So here's the thing: season one was made in 2010, season two was made in 2015. There are there are as of now no plans for a season 3, but stay tuned. 5 years from now, we may get another one, and you might just get a call.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, it doesn't seem that hard to do because of the inexpense of the production values. So I got to think that,
I want to see it. Fantastic. I really do want to see it. The way you've described it in the little bit that I've seen, it almost feels like watching episodes of The Most Interesting Man in the World. You know those commercials?
Yeah.
Like, it lives in
totally.
That universe. I don't know. It just seems very strange.
It's very strange.
My number 9 is a brand new comedy show that debuted this year, a sitcom. Last year, I had a brand new sitcom that only lasted the 1 year and was absolutely brilliant, called The Grinder. This year, at number 9, a brand new HBO series from Danny McBride, Vice Principals.
Oh, yeah. I saw this on the plane, actually.
And you talked about Jaw Drop. Yes, even when it's not funny, when it's not hitting the mark, there is still a specificity to something they're depicting in this show about life in the South and about these characters that really does make my jaw drop. I also am often laughing and often emotionally moved. The cast is great. You can tell Walton Goggins is having a ball. And then... if for no other reason, Vice Principals would be one of my favorite films for introducing me to a woman named Kimberly Abair Gregory, who plays Dr. Belinda Brown, the principal of this high school that the two senior vice principals are teaming up to dethrone, to depose. it's a Shakespearean intrigue behind the throne. plot. And
right.
And what a fantastic place to set such a storyline, but a public high school.
Oh yeah.
And this woman, Miss Burke Gregory, who plays I haven't looked up what her background is. I'm not sure if I've seen her in anything, but you can't take your eyes off of her. She is so versatile and just, you know, these guys, Walton Goggins and Danny McBride, have done some major work in their lives. And when she opens up, boys, step aside. This is a masterclass in comedy going on right
now.
Yeah, so.
For sure. And you have to have that because, you know, a story of two funny guys teaming up on the poor principal, that actor has to balance that out, and she does an amazing job. on that. So, I caught two episodes on the plane on the flight from L.A. to Sydney, and it kept me awake when I should have been sleeping.
Well, one of my favorite compliments you've ever paid anything was when you were watching Mr. Robot on the plane last holiday season back from L.A. And you said, never had I been on a flight that long where I was disappointed that the flight was ending because you didn't have a chance to catch the final couple episodes or something like that. And I thought that was really a great compliment. What's your number eight, Dean Haglund?
Well, you were talking about the Marvel Universe. I'm talking about the DC Universe. And what did I binge watch while on my Thanksgiving holiday week? But Gotham. Now, Gotham's had a lot of problems and not a lot of fans. But talk about performances. If you binge watch all of Gotham and just check out the actor who's playing Penguin, which is Robin Lord Taylor. I think I got that name right. Yes, Robin Lord Taylor is playing Oswald Cobblepot. Holy smokes, is this guy great? I mean, he goes from evil, he gets brainwashed to being a super nice guy, to sniveling, to all-powerful. Like, the gamut that actor gets to go playing the Penguin is phenomenal. Now, yes, they're having second and third season issues about how this universe is supposed to develop. I mean, it's supposed to be the teen years of Batman and how all of the supervillains are coming together. Some of those they've dropped. Some of those may get picked up later on. But all in all, Gotham is my number seven.
It's interesting because I think the internet is judging your lists, what entries you have. The Baz Luhrmann show, most of it was conveyed pretty good. Gotham, like, the internet kept cutting out on you because it's like, quite frankly, the internet's no difference than the rest of us. We don't care. Gotham season three.
By the way.
Yeah, I know you've got a lot of storms, so we apologize to listeners. Stick with us. If it gets bad, we'll change it. But we've been able to hear everything. It just sometimes there's some unexpected delays, and then you click back in. So Gotham season three is Dean Haglund's number eight. My number eight is another comedy show, and this is kind of the lowest it's ever been on my list. And indeed, it doesn't. This season did not live up to quite the lofty heights of previous seasons. Nevertheless, this year of Veep, which is at number eight for me, was admirable in terms of its accomplishment because it survived and thrived despite a change in showrunners and the absence of the show's creator, Armando Iannucci. And it survived and thrived despite moving the show from the East Coast to shooting in L.A. You know a little something about this. When you change dramatically where a show is shot, it affects a lot of things.
A lot of things. However, their locations are a series of offices, so they don't really show a lot of driving around. And we know they're in Washington, D.C., which, as we learned from Bones, you can fake that anywhere. So
let me say a couple things, though, about this. One is East Coast, as an actor, where so much of it is about what the character is feeling physically and energetically. I don't know. Having a meeting that is set in a coffee shop in December in D.C. You're going to have a different energy and attitude, and it's going to be hard to fake that in the 90-degree sunshiny weather in Los Angeles, even if you are bundled up in clothes. So I think there's a different challenge there, you know, because you still want verisimilitude in terms of the performances, and I think actors, the closer you can go to the source, the easier it is for actors, the more real it's going to be.
True.
But the other thing I would think is just the nature of working from home versus working on the road. How are people's focus different? How does their creative energy change? It depends on the person, obviously, and there is no good or bad to it. But the work that you do and the focus you maintain when you're on the road away from home is different than when you're sleeping in your own bed at night. And so it was intriguing for me to see how that would affect things. But all these changes, all that said, Veep was still very funny. The cast was brilliant, and they've pivoted into a new storyline so that as Veep continues, indeed the Veep of the title is neither the vice principal, the vice president, nor the president. Indeed, she's no longer even a part of the government, and yet we're going to still be following her season after season as a civilian.
Isn't that fascinating? Which I think is necessary because, as some pointed out, it's hard to mock politics when politics has become a mockery of itself. You get, no matter how outlandish you make Veep, there's something outlandisher in real life that happens the very next day. So the pivot to go to civilian life, not only smart, I would think necessary.
Well, it's unmined. It is unmined terrain. It is unmined terrain. Although, again, as we discussed on February 1st, Veep is far less about politics than it is a workplace comedy.
That's true. So, very true.
But it is unmined terrain, and so you're right. There, it's rife with fresh creative opportunities there. What is your number seven, Dean Haglund?
Well, let's see. There's, you know, we can't go this far without getting a little genre unto itself called Nordic Noir. I didn't realize all these shows I love actually are now lumped under a subcategory called Nordic Noir. These are Scandinavian crime shows done in their foreign language and trying in no way to hide the fact that they're in these small Scandinavian towns. And this one is a winner. It's called, the English title is Acquitted. The Norwegian title is Frikjent, if I'm pronouncing that right. And it's a story of a successful Norwegian businessman who lives now in Malaysia, who's come back to a small town to buy the successful solar company as a part of an acquisition. But upon returning to his small town, you realize that there was a murder of his high school sweetheart that everybody believes he did, even though he was acquitted, and he's not even sure he did it or not. Not because he was very inebriated in high school. And so we go through not only him delving into his past in this small Norwegian town, but it isn't actually a whodunit because somebody actually killed this poor girl 20 years ago, and it's been unresolved. Even though there was he got off. He maybe just got off because his other girlfriend lied on the stand. It's multi-layered. It's set in a beautiful fjord. The Acquitted is my Nordic noir entry of the year.
The Acquitted is in its second season right now here in 2016. So
yes, I haven't seen that.
I think there's been 18.
I'm sure it's gonna be good.
18 episodes. Okay. You didn't have to admit that you weren't up to date on that.
What am I going
to
say?
I mean, when you get to Barney Miller season 4 on your list, that's when, which was my...
Oh my God, that's my next one.
Which was my favorite Nordic noir. number 7 for me is season 2 of Mr. Robot.
Ah, yes.
And this took a little bit of a tumble. Season 2 was not... at the lofty level of season 1. And so for a lot of people was a bit of a disappointment. It was a slow burn. It reminds me of some of the seasons of Mad Men where, you know, you would go, okay, I don't know if they're still on their game anymore. But when they make the pivot, when they reveal to you what's going on, when they reveal to you what that whole season is really about, then all those episodes you were questioning, you realize were worth it. Does it mean that those episodes were as enjoyable to watch? No, it does not. but the time that you invested paid off. And and I think it's very courageous of a showrunner to do that. To, you know, to, when the question goes, okay, what? Well, I don't know. We may be losing them in this episode. We may, you know, to say, doesn't matter. We'll get them back next week. You know, that's bold. And if you know that what you're doing is going to pay off, I think that's pretty extraordinary. And the other thing that I loved about it was this year, in no small part because Rami Malek said that he physically could not maintain the kind of heavy lifting he had to do in season one, they split out much more of the story's burdens onto their key female characters. And suddenly Mr. Robot became very much a female-driven show. And and how about that? How rare is that for a show that has achieved success to say, you know what, now we're going to do? We're going to become more diverse.
Yeah, that's very clever. And I'm sure, you know, like anything, when you have something that extraordinary in your first season, it is hard, as they all said, to keep that up. And why not, if you've had the cast that they had, why not split that around and spread the wealth and share the glory?
Yeah, and tell something worthwhile. Tell a story we're listening to and challenge your audience, because the truth is you can get trapped in any form by your own success, and you know it when people stop listening to what you're saying. They're too busy applauding it, and they stop listening to it. you know, and the, musical artists find this a lot, but it is true. I mean, I think you need to keep challenging your audience. I defy you to keep liking this almost rather than trying to keep giving you what you like, because, you're either going to grow tired of that, or like I said, it's going to be meaningless for both the people creating it and the people consuming it. What's your number six?
My number six, we were talking talk shows before. My fellow Canadian, Samantha Bee, and her show Full Frontal. Holy smokes. They're not pulling any punches on this one. And not just about anti-Trump. It's also abortion rights, women issues, across the board. This is it seems to go beyond trying to find the jokes in it and just expressing rage through a creative storytelling point of view and laying out the facts. It is at times shocking what she says and what she gets away with, but brave, courageous, and my favorite show for current events and in, I guess it's considered a talk show, or not really, entertainment, evening entertainment show.
Right.
What do you call those now?
I don't know. It's almost like a magazine format comedy show, right?
Almost, yeah. But it's almost defying all of those labels, and it's a genre unto itself. Nordic noir comedy.
It's my favorite Nordic
comedy
noir
rage.
Comedy show. Yeah, exactly.
yeah,
it's very,
exactly.
Very funny. It's very, very funny. Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, Dean Haglund's number six. My number six is a female-driven comedy series created by a woman, and it's season two of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh, look at that.
Season one was on my honorable mention. Season two, they elevated their games and are doing really some of the most sly and satirical comedy on television. That lead, Ellie Kemper, is just incredibly delightful, and the supporting cast could not be better. Titus
Across
Burgess, who is her roommate, is already a national treasure. But I love it, and it's
Carol Kane.
It's got such great social satire while also being a even more biting undressing and deconstruction of television and media tropes than even 30 Rock was.
Well, see, and this is the thing. It's a lot of the same pacing and gags of 30 Rock, and even a lot of the same character types. You know, replace Alec Baldwin with Carol Kane. Replace Jane is the same actress in both, right? But this is my number five, believe it or not. And I don't
believe it.
Why not?
Okay, I do believe it.
Wow. So that's how close we are to thinking that, yeah, Kimmy Schmidt, I am hooked. And once that pacing, have you tried watching that? And once you get into the pacing of it, watch another show and feel how much the gags are labored and are like hauled out like sad, like tropes. Like basically it's showing you everything that when you go to another show, it kind of ruins it to watch another show directly after.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially so, because I get into that. You kind of have to focus on Kimmy Schmidt. You really have to get into a focused state so that you can catch everything. Because it's not just how fast it's coming at you. They are giving you visual gags. They're giving you things in the background. They're doing callbacks to other seasons, to other shows. Of course, they don't anymore play up letting you know, right, she was, the main character was in a bunker, so her cultural references are all from the 1990s. They really underscored those for you in the season one. In this, you have to know the references to know what she's saying, and you have to go, oh, right, that's what she means, because she's referring to something in the 1990s because that's what she knows. It's smart, and it requires you to focus, and then I bring that focus to other shows, and I quickly fall asleep. So that's your number five, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. My number five is, and I'm scrolling to find out, oh, yes, the first year that this surpassed Veep, because it was always like, it was the other great show on that night, but now it's driving the night, and it is HBO's fantastic Silicon Valley. There is no other show that makes me laugh this much. There may never have been another show that may. No, there have been, but it is getting better each and every year, and they just find the perfect people to introduce into the show, and it really is such a heartbreaking examination of how soul crushing it is to follow your dream no matter what your dream is.
That's true. I haven't been watching that except on the plane because I don't think that it's actually showing here.
You don't
anywhere.
Get HBO? There's no home. The home box office is now not down under?
Well, it is down under, but it's ridiculously overpriced here. So it's only HBO to go, and it's very rare and hard to come by.
Okay,
so,
well, that was a fantastic caveat that people heard most of surrounded by your
another lightning strike.
You're cutting out. So let's hear your number four.
My number four, this, of course, now we're going to realize pretty much the rest of them are all
Nordic noirs.
Nordic noirs. No, not quite. My number four is the retelling of Queen Elizabeth, The Crown, on Netflix. I don't know if you're watching this, but it's Matt Smith. Well, you're not watching this?
No.
Crown? It is actually quite good. It's the guy who wrote The Queen and, you know, that guy. What's that guy's name? The Crown is a retelling of the Queen's coronation and her marriage to Prince Philip. And if you're into the minutiae of the royal family, it's all very fascinating. And even if you don't know a thing about it, it's told in such a way that that's very dramatic and you see the personal sacrifices that you wouldn't think would come and be in the royal family, but it humanizes the entire royal family in such a way that makes for a really interesting television.
So they're
The Crown.
10 episodes. It was created by Peter Morgan. Yeah, the writer.
That's the guy.
Right. I can't believe that this is true, but maybe it is. I'm reading that the budget for that those 10 episodes was $156 million. Is it this kind of... I mean, Netflix is spending money. As we know, they spent like $100 million on that first season of House of Cards. But, I mean, is it ending up on screen?
Absolutely. You know, they recreated the wedding dress at a cost of $37,000. And you can tell there's a close-up, and it is... they show because they have it filmed, so they're showing historical footage right next to the recreation, and it is immaculately done. The production design, the art direction, all of that is carefully detailed to historical accuracy. So it is money that's showing up there on the screen for sure.
Well, my number four, Dean Hagland, also made my list last year. And it is season two of Vince Gilligan's prequel series and also a sequel series to Breaking Bad. It's Better Call Saul.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, in season two began after Breaking Bad before flashing back to the events that lead up to Breaking Bad. You know, and it's it stands alone as its own show. Absolutely. There are characters in this. That you, especially his on-again, off-again partner slash love interest, Kim, who never appear in Breaking Bad. You don't know what happens to them, why they're not in that universe. And they're so interesting. I mean, her work is so good. And and of course, it's fun seeing, you know, Mike and Saul before they become the characters that we know in Breaking Bad. But what I was going to say was you will forget that it's in that Breaking Bad world sometime, because just these characters and what they're going through on a daily basis, and the brother relationship played out between Odenkirk and Michael McKean, is so heart-wrenching. You know, this character's desire to get his older brother's approval means so much to him, and the betrayals that take place. You forget that it's part of the Breaking Bad world until suddenly they cross paths with someone or something from that world, and suddenly these stakes, these frightening jeopardies start to be entered into the mix all around that sometimes the characters themselves are not aware of, but we are, because we know where they're heading. So it's right. Really doing a wonderful kind of two-step in that regard.
Cool. Well, you know, I'm holding off on season two only because I left in the middle of season one, so I was going to binge watch all of it all at once all together. So I was looking forward to that.
Right, because as we know, good shows are always better when you binge watch them. no, in fact, good shows are worse when you binge watch them, but by all means, do what you were going to. And
oh my God.
And you know, Better Call Saul Season 1 was number 3 on your list last year. I would just like to point that out.
I know, because I enjoyed it that much.
Season 2, not on your list at all.
Well, because I haven't seen it, like I said.
Well, yeah, why would you? Why would you when Season 1 was only your number 3 show of the year? Oh, what is your number 3 show of this year, Dean?
Holy smokes. Well, you know...
What Baz Luhrmann musical documentary series?
you're a dick. Anyway, the point is, there's nothing... These, the last three, of course, resonate deeply with me personally. And the first of this is a hilarious comedy out of London called The Toast of London. This is Matt Berry as a middle-aged, eccentric, out-of-work actor who gets some occasional voiceover work and occasional theater work, where he becomes a pompous ass, and oh my God, this thing is hilarious. I don't know if you've seen this. It's inside jokes. There's a lot of cameos from British theater people, including Andrew Lloyd Webber playing himself. There's always hilarious. So then in the studio where he's recording. There's always the audio technician, Clem Fandango, who always is interested in stuff. This is Clem Fandango. Yes, I know Clem Fandango. Could you, Stephen, could you give us a little more? Because his name is Stephen Toast, and that's why he's the Toast of London. And, of course, his arch nemesis, Ray Purchase, also gets all the gigs that he doesn't get. It is hilarious. It is deeply resonant with my career, and I can't get enough of this show, The Toast of London.
So there have been 19 episodes of this over, I guess, three seasons through 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you, I'm intrigued. I see that an actor named Lewis McLeod played Stanley Kubrick in a couple of episodes. Can you tell me anything
yes.
about this?
Yeah, well, if I remember correctly, Stanley, I don't know if it's the Stanley Kubrick, so they're all excited to triple over Stanley Kubrick, the director, but it turns out to be just another guy who's Stanley Kubrick. And that's a lot of kind of the gags that they have there. It's like, you know, Stanley Kubrick, not the Stanley Kubrick. And
is it contemporary? Is it set
yes.
present day? Okay, all right.
It is set in present day, and it's but it's you know, the underpinnings of the London theater scene. So
yeah,
it has a lot of the actors coming through. It has the there's a hilarious cameo from the ex-actor from Midsummer Murders, who apparently, according to the show, is now hunting rabbits and selling them door to door. You know, that kind of thing.
I always found Extras really funny. Ricky Gervais' show Extras.
Yeah.
And it was hugely funny, but it was never real in the way like his Office was, right?
Right.
And one of the reasons was because Ricky Gervais had become a big, big star. And this is a
right.
big, big star depicting what it's like to be on the bottom rung of and near success, but to be on the bottom rung of it. And this is the kind of show, what you're describing to me, that I feel like Ricky Gervais might have wanted to make, especially if he was making it before he became famous.
Yeah, exactly. And Matt Berry is just on the cusp of that kind of fame. You sort of know him, but you don't know him. But he has enough comedy chops to carry this thing, but at the same time be arrogant enough to be pompous in a lovely, you know, British way, but also to be a loser enough not to have any of the talent as Toast to carry it, but as the actor, totally to carry it. So it's really, really good work on Matt Berry's part.
My number three is another HBO show. I mean, boy, uh-huh. What is this, my fourth or fifth HBO? I guess it's my fifth HBO show. Out of 10. And it's something I was skeptical of when I first heard about it. In fact, we talked about some of the horrible goings on taking place on the set, the mistreatment of people, animals, etc. But it is darn good, interesting, compelling, thematically rich storytelling, examining nothing less than what it means to be human and how we are all trapped in pre-programmed loops. It's Westworld.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, I've been hearing back and forth on this.
What have you heard fourth?
I heard fourth that it's really good and exciting, but the back is it's a bunch of robots having sex, I believe was one review that I heard.
I would argue that there's a lot of people who are really fucking stupid.
Oh, well, yeah. That's my conversation group, I guess.
There is, there's my defense of it. look, this is a show that, you know, this is the problem with one of the problems with the binge watch idea is, like, I heard this.
Right.
When the big reveals are made throughout these episodes, people said, well, a lot of people guessed that. Like, that means, therefore, it wasn't a good reveal. It no longer are people asking the important questions like, well, what does it mean?
Right.
Right? This is a show that begs that question. What do these things mean? If you are not someone who is interested in this. And I think, look, the reviews have been fantastic, but especially people who are online reviewers who have to watch things quickly and respond to them, they fall into the same bad habit that all binge watchers do, which is it becomes plot-oriented, period. And that's never why episodic storytelling worked. What worked best about episodic storytelling, right, was you got to actually explore character.
Right. Yes. And go through the character arc, an emotional arc that you could go with.
And if, you know, if there is a better small screen villain than Anthony Hopkins' Dr. Ford character with a more delicious villain performance, I haven't seen it. If there is a better performance period on television than Jeffrey Wright's character who, playing Dr. Ford's right-hand man, I haven't seen it. It's a wonderful group of actors. The reinvention of Tandy Newton, who I have admired all my life and have been wondering if she would ever get a role that was worthy of her, and she has it. And the women in Westworld are absolutely killing it.
Wow.
So, anyway, Westworld, my number three. What's your number two?
My number two, this is second season of an animated series that purports itself to be a comedy, though I watch it and only relate, kind of never laugh, but deeply emotionally resonant. And this is BoJack Horseman, because this is a story of a horse that was on a very famous TV show in the 90s and now is suffering career angst and wandering through the Hollywood Hills with a plethora of human and non-human friends. A book publisher played by Patton Oswalt, that's a penguin. His agent's a cat, Princess Caroline. You know, all of these things as he goes through. And it's, you know, guys and all, Paul F. Tompkins as the dog, Mr. Peanut Butter. Hilarious, yet so important a character. And talk about a dark ending for that season. Not going to spoil it, but holy smokes. If this is supposed to be a cartoon series, nothing ends season two with a downbeat on a heavy, heavy foot like season two of BoJack Horseman.
Well, I'm glad to see this on your list. A couple years ago it was on your list, and then we skipped a year, so... I'm glad to see that
year.
It's number two, and I will be checking this out at some point. This is something that is on my to-do list for 2017. And
yeah.
And by the way, we'll learn all about the to-do lists for 2017 on next week's show. I want to let everyone know next week is our annual Hold the Feet to the Fire episode, where we review the New Year's resolutions we made at the beginning of the prior year, and we set our New Year's resolutions for the coming year. That's on next week's installment of your Chill Pack.
Wow.
My number
what
two.
What we call disappointment. Yes. No.
My number two of the top television series of 2016. I mentioned before that if all I could ever be allowed to watch were episodes of Documentary Now coupled with the documentaries they're parodying, I would be all right with that. That would be enough of an existence for me. So good are the stories being told in these phony documentaries. So funny the work by the writers, by the directors who are really on very low budgets, very quickly. I mean, these things, sometimes they're dealing with first drafts of documentaries. The work these production design crews and the cinematographers and the costumers are doing, and the directors recreating a wide variety of eras, shooting in a wide variety of formats and styles. And it's just so gosh darn delightful, Dean. And it doesn't spoil documentaries for you. If you love the documentaries that they're parodying, it makes you love them more. And like you would particularly love Juan likes chicken and rice, which is a parody of Euro Dreams of Sushi. And anyway, it's Documentary Now. I can't recommend this enough. It is each season's about 6 episodes long. Most of them are 30 minutes long. And seriously, avail yourself of the original documentaries, whether you watch them first and then. But I enjoy watching the episodes and then going back and watching the documentaries, whether I've seen them before or not. Documentary Now! Exclamation mark. In, according to host Helen Mirren, its 51st season. What's your number one, Dean? We got just about a minute. What's your number one?
Well, if there was ever something that was a bizarre and a tribute to a comedian's vision, it's Maria Bamford's Lady Dynamite. Holy smokes. This is a story. Maria Bamford, of course, a very oddball comedian who not only seems to be telling her life, you cut between her fledgling career in Los Angeles, trying to get on with the commercials and so forth. And you also cut to some time previous where she is in a dark depression with her family in Duluth, Minnesota. This cuts back and forth. It is a hilarious. I think they only did 10 episodes, but it is a testament to a single comedian's personal vision and sticking it out in L.A., doing her brand of comedy since the mid-early 90s. So, Lady Dynamite, Maria Bamford.
This is not on my list, though a season two might very well be, and indeed a season two seems to be forthcoming. Is this Netflix?
Yes, it is, yeah. Actually. Netflix, yeah. Original.
Season two seems to be forthcoming in 2017. It's co-created by the creator of Arrested Development. And
yeah.
Much like Arrested Development, boy, the cast that has been assembled is so terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, there are many recurring people that you'll know. You know, the Anna Gasteyers, the Ed Begley Jr.'s.
Mo Collins as her mother.
Well, what about Dean
Cain?
That's right. The guy that I once referred to as the Mexican Superman. I didn't know what his heritage was. It was bad. I was not... I was in a bad, bad place then. But but the thing is that, you know, there's wonderful actors who haven't really gotten their due, at least for a long time, like Mary Kay Place. And how about Fred Melamed, who plays Bruce Ben Bacharach? Yeah. Talk about him a little bit.
Well, okay, as a character, you know, so often, or not so often, when I moved to L.A., I was shocked to find that everybody in management and agent positions weren't sharp go-getters, but in fact, people with many a personal problem.
Exactly. Lily had an agency meeting one time that she thought went great, and then they didn't sign her because the feedback was they thought she was weird. Of course they thought she was weird when... of course they would not accept her, and something like that would come out when one of the two agents she met with broke down sobbing during the middle of the meeting.
Well, see, I believe that's a scene in one of the episodes of Lady Dynamite where the manager starts crying and all she's trying to do is get work. And what Maria Bamford does so well is just be affected by everything. She is so sensitive, a comedian, that she has unending positivity, but the crazy world around her just drives her into a deep depression that sends her back to Duluth. It is hilariously surreal and, you know, from a personal point of view, so truthful. And I think that's the key to Maria Bamford's whole stand-up act. Regardless of how many voices she does, how many characters, how bizarre her, and, you know, there's no single punchline to any of her jokes, but all of it grounded in a reality and a truth that just brings that whole series home. It's fantastic.
Well, if I may say so, if any list that contains Gotham... and
Baz Luhrmann.
And a Baz Luhrmann documentary series could be a strong list. It would be the list that you just read. I think it's a very, very compelling list. My number one is The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Oh, yeah.
And You say, oh, yeah, now. And yet, the truth is, if we had this conversation a year ago, I was so certain this thing was going to stink to high heaven.
Yes, I recall you.
I was really pessimistic. This seemed like just the worst combination of trying to continue to exploit the sensationalistic, you know, media frenzy surrounding the Simpson murders, combined with a whole bunch of over-the-hill creative personnel in front of and behind the camera, desperately seeking relevance again. And who knew those two things could work so well?
Right.
Two awful tastes in one made a delicious meal. And it is. It's so funny. And it's so insightful. And yes, these actors, be it Travolta or be it Cuba Gooding Jr. or that guy from Friends, David Schwimmer, of course, they're always recognizable as the actors. But it's that perfect combination of stars playing alongside larger-than-life personalities, and somehow the bizarre alchemy of the two creates this alternative universe that you really want to explore. And like I said, it's so funny, and it's so satirically sharp, and it does give insight into the world as it was then and the media as it is now. And there are some extraordinary performances, especially by the lesser famous people in the cast. But I can't recommend it enough. It's great, great fun. I was sad when every single episode would end that I had to wait another week for one to drop. And
but it's a documentary series.
No, it's not a documentary series. That's the Baz Luhrmann thing.
No,
it's a fictional series. It's a fictional series.
It is fictional.
Yeah, that's why you have movie stars playing real life people. Yeah, that you don't have in a documentary.
Right. So just like, well, never mind.
So that's
the Get Down. Yeah.
That's an hour and 8 minutes of a show, and yet we find that we still need another 10 minutes to explain what a documentary is. Documentary now, these are not documentaries either. These are
right.
But okay.
Fictional.
Yeah,
right.
But I think that's what confuses you.
Right, because The Get Down also has fantastic actors, and it's not a documentary series. So.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
The end of 2016. We hope that this will indeed be out with the old, in with the new, and we'll be back next week with our very special New Year's resolution show. Until then, I'm Phil Larinus.
I'm Dean Haglund.
Time to light a candle for those MAGA people. Oil did burn and burn.
Day two.
Time to spin a dreidel and hope that Kimbo shows up on my turn.
Day three!
Fry a bunch of latkes with applesauce, sour cream and all.
Day four!
We're cooking up the brisket. The kosher butcher sold my uncle's store.
Day five!
Let's leave the man a chef that's on the shelf.
Day six.
Give for the children $5 just from great grandma Sam.
Day seven.
Light a whole bunch of candles. Gotta keep the shamans going right to left all the way until.
Day eight. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Days of love.
Promotional consideration paid for by Empire State Gas. From farm to pump, we've got great gas. Belated spoiler alert.